DW Africa Link.
Tensions are rising and lives hang in the balance as the UN Security Council calls for an immediate halt to the fighting in South Sudan. As global attention is turning once again to Africa's youngest nation, we unpack the latest developments, the new international pressure, and what this may mean for the South Sudanese citizens. Stick with us. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
The UN Security Council has recently called for an immediate end to renewed fighting in South Sudan, warning that recent clashes highlight ongoing instability and an urgent need for full implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. The Council, however, also renewed the mandate of its peacekeeping mission, the UN Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, for another year. The Council also urged all parties, including forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar, to return to political dialogue. Now, joining me for this very important discussion is economist Abraham Maliyet Mame, the South Sudan Investment Authority Secretary General, and our own DW's Patrick Oyet. Patrick, I'll start with you as our correspondent, our ears and eyes on the ground.
The current situation is still gloomy because there is uncertainty in South Sudan, especially in the Upper Nile region. A new governor has been installed in Upper Nile State. Also, the government troops have actually taken over the control of Nasir. However, the situation remains tense because the people who are fighting in the name of the White Army have left the area, but still it is really not clear whether they will come back or not. And that makes the ordinary South Sudanese people therefore very scared that any time maybe there could be more fighting. So the situation still remains tense. And also the fact that Dr. Riek Machar, who is the first vice president, remains under house arrest. The officials here say they will go to court, but we've not seen also any movement as far as that is concerned. So the whole situation remains unclear. People cannot predict what is going to come next. And that's really what is concerning many people on the ground here.
Right. Now, coming to you, Dr. Abraham Maliyet, it seems that the two leaders, Salva Kiir and his deputy, are the real problem in South Sudan. At least that's according to outsiders, right? But you are in the country. Is that the same way people in the country see things?
The opinion here in South Sudan is divided over who is the problem, who is not. But the overall people want peace in South Sudan, and it seems the way the two leaders are handling the peace issues, it's sometimes bring uncertainties. For the last 2 years, we have experienced some peace until the incident of Nasir triggered some hostilities. So yes, there is especially among the young people, they believe the two leaders are not allowing the peace to be enjoyed by the South Sudanese. So we can say, yes, they believe that these two leaders, they are not handling the peace the way it's supposed to be. The peace agreement itself is a very complicated document. You know, it's very hard to be implemented like any other straight-up document. It's got a lot of technical issues that being put there. They're not easy really to be implemented. So the peace itself is a problem. The peace agreement is a problem. Maybe the leaders are trying their best to engage themselves in their own understanding. But the document itself is a problem because it's very hard to really interpret it in a correct way. Everyone will have their own interpretation of it.
So you have analyzed also the document. You are an expert. What is your opinion exactly? What is the biggest problem in that document, Dr. Mali?
First of all, those who developed it, they don't have the context of South Sudanese realities, because in South Sudanese, we live as a number of tribes that they actually brought together by the war against the North for the independence. But sitting down and sign an agreement within ourselves is completely different, because we should have set and signed an agreement that is solving the internal problem. This chunk of this peace agreement is developed out of the CPA, the Comprehensive Peace Agreement that was done between North and South. So there's so many similarities that were actually adopted from that agreement that gave the South Sudan independence. You know, when you are struggling over a power within the one united country like South Sudan, such other elements like having two armies or two securities or go and try to do the power sharing from the small administrative unit all the way to the national, you can't do it. People are one. You know, we are not different. We are one people. You know, within one county, you may have a different political view, but it does not mean that we are not one. So I think the document itself was constructed in such a way to make it quite difficult to apply into a context of one country.
Right, but now we are having this discussion because the UN Security Council has extended the mandate, United Nations Peacekeeping Mission that was founded in 2011 to consolidate peace. Now it has been extended to until next April. Do you foresee this, Doctor, as something that is likely to bring a semblance of peace?
You know, the UN, you see here in Juba or in other part of South Sudan, they are there. They are roaming around the street, but they cannot take an action. You know, they are supposed to have a bit some powers, you know, to intervene. If there is any fight between the two warring parties, they should go and stop the fight. But now I think they act as a buffer. They're not really. I would have liked their mandate to be made clear, so we know why are they here, what are they doing. But I think now they decided to be in the big cities, and as UN usually they I don't believe the mandate was clear, because you cannot come and say I'm peacekeeping. What peace do we keep? People are fighting every day, and you're not doing anything about that. So even if the mandate was for me, it's not going to make anything unless they intervene and build the peace between the warring parties. Talking is not enough.
What exactly did the UN write in this letter or document in terms of extending their peacekeeping in the country? What are the facts that they put there, or have you seen it?
Yeah, they extended the mandate based on the same principle of which they founded it. So there's nothing new. They have not added anything. I would have liked them to add more powers. Like if people are fighting, like there is, you know, it's very hard to separate between who is the army and who is not the army. In some cases, some local people will have arms like the white army. So you really don't know, are these people belong to a faction, or are they a normal citizen that they arm themselves? UN should have been given a mandate to see if it is local people fighting local people, then they should have a stand. If it is the warring parties fighting each other, then the mandate is wavy, the way I see it. So I want them to review that. Extending it is okay. You can extend it to any time. But what is the ultimate end, the end goal of extending it every time and you don't achieve? What is it for?
Patrick, you are also, I mean, our eyes and ears, like I said earlier, and I know you've been reporting on this for a while, and the intense fighting has prevented desperately needed food from reaching some over 60,000 malnourished children for almost a month, according to the United Nations. How is the government dealing with the situation right now? Is there any sign that they care, or it's all about the fighting?
Yes, yes. The government says it is concerned about those situations, especially of the issue of food insecurity generally, and also the issue of the malnourished children in other parts of the country. Some of the areas there are many problems. Number one problem is, of course, the issue of whether communal violence or intercommunal violence, or also the conflict that is normally between the opposition groups led by Riek Machar and the government troops. But also other problems are problems like, for example, floods. We are now entering deep into the rainy season, and there are places that accessing becomes extremely difficult during rainy season. What has happened in the past with most of the UN agencies is that during the dry season, they take enough food to those areas, and then when the rainy season comes, at least they have some logistic already in place that they use to supply. But of course, in some part of the country, during the dry season, there were clashes here and there, so those food staff were not positioned in those areas, and that's why those problems are there. Not only the problem of food, but also the problem of health. For example, in a county just next to Nasir, known as Ulang, the non-governmental organization, a medical charity, Doctors Without Borders, that was providing health services in the area, had to pull out because their facility was looted, their staff were threatened, so they had to close and leave. And just a few weeks ago, there was also attack by Doctors Without Borders in Old Fangak, where a pharmacy was destroyed. So those are also affecting people negatively in the sense that the health services are not sufficient along the issue of food. So yeah, the effect is there. Even though the government says it is not its policy to block aid from going to any part of the country, the reality on the ground is that you may not access some parts of the country.
Because it's not safe, yeah, right. Doctor, I don't know if you want to also add something on that. I mean, we're talking of 60,000 malnourished children now, and this extension could also be actually a huge advantage in terms of this. But also the international community wants to use the deployment as one tool to bring the country back from the brink. How do you rate the chances of stop all-out war?
Actually, it's an opportunity for the government and for Riek Machar forces to go back into peace implementation. It's far more better now for the partners to pressure. It's important for all the partners to push the parties to realize the peace. The way I have seen the extension, it's really needed to be forced fully supported. The monitoring implementation of this peace, it's very important. I need to see the partners, international community for that matter, if they were to be on the ground and walk the talk, some progress. So yes, I see there is a big role expected from our partners, international community. If they leave the country, it will be very hard to implement this remaining part of this agreement.
Now, speaking still about the international community, Dr. Maliet, it also wants to stop funding preparations for elections after the country's transitional leadership postponed any ballot by 2 years last September. Where does this really leave Salva Kiir's government?
You see, the ultimate, if you want to call it the crown for this piece, is to run elections. And these elections will put some claims who is who and who is. So I still believe funding elections from partners is an important step. It is where you can be able to weigh and now measure whether the success has been made in peace implementation, because ultimately you need to have elections, credible elections, and we will not be able to do it ourselves unless the international community is taking their stand. Like what we did during the referendum. Referendum could have been rigged, could have been anything, but the international community came in its big weight and monitored it. And there we had a very fair referendum elections. But if they leave it up to us, I believe we don't have institutions that are able to run credible elections by ourselves. So their presence is really important. Their funding is really important. They can cut other funding for aid or development, but we need them to support conducting credible elections in this country, because that would be the pathway to some stability in this country.
Yeah, it is important, Dr. Maliet, but I also feel that aid should not be cut, especially when we look at the number of children that are suffering right now. Maybe both should not be cut if you're saying elections are also important and their funding is important. But now coming to you, Patrick, rights groups have also recently sounded the alarm over the deadly use of the improvised and unguided explosives in the north part of the country. What more can you tell us about that?
Yes, we've been receiving reports of the bombardment by helicopters. And one of them, of course, is the one that took place at the facility run by Doctors Without Borders in Old Fangak, and also some parts of Nasir. However, the army has not actually said anything about it. In many cases, also, we've heard of innocent people losing their lives. There is a growing concern, not only among members of international community or regional bodies, but also among local people, because all of us come from some villages. And there have been, of course, bombardments, especially in Nasir and Ulang, where the government really came out, especially the Minister for Information, and said, yes, the government was carrying out some operations to handle the people who are lawless, who have weapons, and they were attacking government positions. And then thereafter, we've also heard of cases of bombardments in many parts of the country, especially in Unity State as well, in a place, in many places actually, but one of them is known as Mayom County. And then we've had also the aerial bombardment in Old Fangak, where the facility run by Doctors Without Borders was bombed. And we had a report of some people losing their lives, especially children, and also civilians. A market also, we are told, was bombed. So there have been concern about this from the local people also, including county commissioners who are also government officials. They have been raising complaints about this bombardment. They say it is really not fine. If it is a war, if it is fighting between the people who are fighting, it should be them targeting themselves, but not facilities run by health workers or facilities that are for civilians like markets. So there is a growing concern about that. However, the army itself has not been talking much about this. At the beginning, it was clearly coming out and saying, yes, we are carrying out operation. But it reached a certain point, whenever we ask the army how we've reported of this bombardment, they say, we don't have a comment to make. We don't have a comment to make. But of course, on the ground, this is happening. So there's concern both locally and also among regional as well as international members of the community.
Right. Now, Patrick, since you have the mic still, as we wrap up our discussion, when you talk to South Sudanese from all the political divide, what do they tell you exactly? Let's start with the elite and then, you know, the ordinary South Sudanese who hustle daily to make ends meet.
The people of South Sudan, across board, they actually do not even care who is the president, who is the vice president, who is the minister, who is holding what position. What people want desperately is peace. People want peace. People want their children to go to school. People want, when they are sick, they should be able to go to hospitals. They don't care about this position that some individuals, especially at the top level of government, are always fighting over. So the ordinary South Sudanese people are really exhausted. They are tired of this. And for young people who are trying to settle down, trying to marry, begin a family, build a house for yourself, they say they are really exhausted and they feel very bad, because every time there is some peace, another problem comes up. Like, for example, since 2018 up to March 2025, there has been relative peace. People have been actually moving forward in terms of developing, in terms of going to school, studying, and doing their own work, farming and so on. And all of a sudden, everything is falling apart. So if people again are to go back to refugee camps, run away from home, later you come, you start rebuilding your lives, and then again, another problem starts. People are fighting. Everything you have tried to build is destroyed. That's what many people tell us.
Right. Wow. But also, Dr. Maliet, as we wrap up our discussion, just to touch on that March arrest of Mashar on charges of trying to stir up a rebellion, it sparked international concern that conflict could flare anew. We also saw President Salva Kiir only allowing Uganda's Yoweri Museveni to mediate instead of regional bodies. What's your take? And if you were to meet these leaders today, what advice would you give them?
Well, it's going to be very short. I want my leaders to understand South Sudan is more bigger than themselves. And expectation from them, being the people who fought for our country to be liberated, they should take the country above everything else. That's my advice to them. Because this country remains, and they, by the virtue of time, they will go. all of us will go, but our country remains. So I want them to take our country as heart, and they know that they have a role to play. But when it comes to making a decision that brings peace, they should follow the peace path. That would be my advice to them.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Abraham Maliet, and our correspondent in South Sudan, Patrick Oyet, for joining us here on DW Africa Link podcast. Sticking with South Sudan and the UNMISS mission currently active there, DW's Kai Nebe takes us through how the mission has been preparing for potential conflict and why some are still optimistic strafe can be avoided.
Yes, indeed, Josie. Now, in the words of Lieutenant General Mohan Subramanian, the force commander of the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, the situation is serious.
Situation today in South Sudan is perhaps the nearest to a situation which can result in a civil war. This country has suffered two civil wars before its independence and two after its independence. There is no appetite for more suffering in the population. They have suffered a lot due to civil wars. So we have to stop the civil war at whatever cost.
With that in mind, it's worth going to South Sudan and seeing how an international initiative like UNMISS tries to beat the odds stacked against it. A nervous population, unhelpful or under-resourced regional leadership, torrential rain, roads so slick that not even 4x4 trucks can cross, to name a few. But in 2023, Gita Pius became the head of the UNMISS field office in the Greater Piwo Administrative Area, which is in eastern South Sudan, and colloquially known as the GPAA. And she noticed that they had no access roads, they suffered from insecurity, and there was also an airstrip, but it was completely in disrepair. These challenges caused a dire shortage of food supplies, especially during the long rainy seasons, which of course caused all the roads to become basically undrivable. However, instead of giving up on this situation, she promised the local county administrator that she would somehow try and find some funding to fix the infrastructure. And this is kind of how it went, according to her at least.
So that time, a foreign affairs ministry delegation came to visit from Korea. So I begged to get some funding on behalf of the community of GPA. So the government of Korea allocated some funding to buy some maram. So we bought 140 trucks of red maram from Juba to establish this airstrip.
And of course, red maram is very important to building roads in this particular area of South Sudan. So along with their Indian counterparts who were busy protecting them, they were armed and giving them protection in this particular area, these South Korean peacekeeping engineers worked nearly nonstop for almost 4 months to rehabilitate the access roads, the streets in Pibo town, the airstrip, and also create new football fields, which of course can also be used for other things, not just football. And this was a feat that not even a South Korean commanding officer who was working on the project could quite believe.
Our engineer team did some MSR operation around some 400 kilometers from Boru to Piboru and included some Akobo side.
At least for now, the improved infrastructure can enable safe travel and trade to flourish, and it also improves access to health services during the cholera outbreaks. And, you know, it can also act as a vehicle for helping communities connect and help with peace-building initiatives. The efforts of the UN in this area have not gone unnoticed by local administrators like Nyinginga Okanyo-Kiro.
We have to appreciate the enemies for the effort that they have really put now a maram in the airstrip of Greater Bibur. This initiative, it will really help in so many key areas in terms of social services that to be delivered to this citizen or this community of GFA will really help a lot.
And so while observers abroad and also locally are, for good reasons, on tenterhooks about the prospects of continued peace in South Sudan, the UNMISS officials are quite literally building roads and connections for peace and, in some ways, giving cause for optimism.
Many thanks for that, Kai Nebe. Well, that's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. You can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Kai Nebe. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.